the CougarFan.com Rice and Shout Podcast, a weekly conversation about BYU sports between me, Adam Mangum, and my brother Matt. It's season 9, episode 383. We're going to talk about that tough Utah loss. What does a ninth straight loss to Utah mean? Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. Rise and Shout, Cougars. Let's do this. Let's make this intro easy, Matt. We're going to talk some college football beyond BYU for a second.
Oh, good. I like it.
All right. So Phil Steele put out this kind of quadrant thing where the vertical axes is admirable to embarrassing of your football program, okay? And the horizontal axis is powerhouse on the right, weak link to the left. I will tweet this out, put it on Facebook, and put it on Instagram so that folks can see what we're talking about. Okay.
And this is submitted by listener Brandon Fears. Suggested we talk about this.
Now it doesn't have all the football teams on here, okay? In Division I. It has a few non-P5 schools, and then I believe all the P5 schools. The only non-P5 schools listed on this little chart are UCF, Boise State, BYU, Army. Is that it?
I think that's it.
Cincinnati, sir. Miss Cincinnati. Who's not a P5 school, are they? Did they get in the P5 while I wasn't looking?
I don't think so. Well, and like seriously though, like is Wake Forest really a P5 school? I mean,
yes.
What does that even mean?
It's all a technicality. So anyway, BYU ends up on the weakling side just barely, and neutral on admirable versus embarrassing. Okay. A couple other schools to note: Utah is in like this top right quadrant of both a powerhouse and admirable with UCF, Washington, and them, okay? Our fellow independent Notre Dame is in the powerhouse kind of neutral territory with Alabama. Mississippi State, really, is a powerhouse? Clemson,
I don't even know what that means.
Is both admirable and a powerhouse, but not as admirable. Now, I'm looking at all this. I don't even know what this means. I mean, it's a cool chart, but I'm not exactly sure why Missouri is embarrassing, maybe because they haven't played well the last few years. But Miami is admirable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I took it as, and maybe I'm thinking about it wrong, but I took it as like teams that are easy or hard to cheer for right now.
But Alabama.
So Alabama's like historically a powerhouse. But like people are kind of like sick of the Alabama, right? So,
and Ohio State is kind of the way I was thinking. Powerhouse, but embarrassing them and Michigan State, which is fantastic.
Well, yeah, because they're difficult schools to cheer for right now, yeah, right? They're embroiled in controversy.
True. Yeah.
That's the way I thought about it.
I think you're probably right. It's probably a combination of things. So would you have predicted that BYU would be on the weakling side and not admirable or embarrassing and neutral in that category? I would have predicted
neutral in that category. Really, I found interesting.
Yeah, here's the thing. I mean, BYU fans think people hate us or whatever sometimes, and you'll have your Utah fans and some BYU haters, and there's a few articles, weird ones over the years where BYU is the most hated. BYU is not the most hated program in the country, right? That's just easy because a lot of people just don't. To be hated, people have to care about you, and there's a lot of people that don't care about BYU.
I mean, there's a lot of indifference.
Ohio State has got to be the most hated football team, right?
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
There's probably a few others that are in that group. Upcoming opponent, Tennessee, was neither a powerhouse nor weakling, and embarrassing.
Yep.
And we'll get to that here in a minute. Where was USC? I couldn't.
USC's clustered with Tennessee. They're like one of them. They're the third most embarrassing school on this list.
Yeah, on the list.
And right in the middle of the weakling powerhouse.
Yeah, that's true. And our NBA alma mater, Purdue, is More of a weakling than BYU and embarrassing.
They're kind of in the middle of that weakling embarrassing quadrant.
Yeah, we're kind of clustered with Nebraska, Kentucky, Indiana, Cal, maybe.
Yeah, that's
kind of our peer group. Interesting. It's interesting.
I feel like Kentucky is a team on the rise. I don't know.
It's
but you know, if you look at the admirable list, I felt like that's teams easy to cheer for, right? Like UCF right now is a team. If you are a UCF fan, that's an easy team for you to cheer for. Right
well,
now.
And easy. I've also took this, and I didn't see the criteria, so I could be wrong. That it's easy not just for your fans to root for, which I think was part of it, but for other fans to root for. Because if it was easy to root for just your fans, Alabama would be top right quadrant, right?
Right.
Clemson would be top right quadrant. I think there's a national thing here that people are like, I don't want to root for them. Now, Washington is easy to root for. Apparently Utah, I guess. You know, Wisconsin, but people like Wisconsin, right? Nobody hates on Wisconsin.
The Wisconsin fans are like absurdly nice.
Virginia, admirable.
That's all I know.
Arizona State's admirable. That one was a little of a surprise. My favorite on this list is like Duke, BC, Georgia Tech. They're admirable and they're terrible. They're weaklings, right? Like, it's kind of an interesting combo. Anyway, all right. Well, let's move on and let's climb on into the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
I haven't done that in a while.
Oh, that had some force behind it.
I think that, if we're going to talk about
that might have been packaged at high altitude.
If we're going to talk about this Utah game here in a little bit, I need a little pick-me-up beforehand. But before we get to that, well, actually, it's part and partial here. Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney.
That's at Justin Z. Sweeney on Twitter. And, of course, you can climb in the tweet bag on Twitter at BYU_RiceShop. He says, our Seinfeld gift thread post-game was... Did you see that, Matt?
Oh, geez.
Sweeney and I were going back and forth from the Rise and Shop podcast Twitter page on GIFs describing the game, but just Seinfeld.
I'm going to go ahead and insert the word cathartic there.
I am going to say amazing. All right. So this is going to be a big... I'm about to get on a soapbox here, but I want your thoughts first. Also, does the UT loss... to Georgia State, 26-point underdogs, act as a motivating refocus tool for a team or a deflating, dividing omen for worse things to come for the Volunteers? Hashtag tweetbag. Hey, see, he references the 2009 Florida State almost losing to Jacksonville State the week before. Matt, is this UT loss a motivating refocusing tool or a sign of bad things to come for Tennessee?
It's a sign of bad things to come for Tennessee, and it definitely is not going to. This is not a team that's going to refocus and reload like FSU in 2009. That's just, I mean, if you watch this, that's just not. That's not what I saw. Okay, this is a sign, everybody. This is a leading indicator. This team's not very good.
Leading indicator. They weren't any good last year. They're probably worse. They lost their last three games.
Now that would be a lagging indicator.
That's
a leading indicator. You're right. No, you know, I guess last year's results would be a leading indicator.
Yeah, yeah. So they lost to Vanderbilt. I'm getting the order wrong. Vanderbilt, Missouri, and who to end the season? They lost their last three games, including Vanderbilt, Missouri, and now they're four losses in a row with this Georgia State. They're not good. Guys, I watched that entire game, and everyone's like, oh, well, they kind of turned it on in the second half. They lost in the second half.
Oh, my gosh.
They
kind of turned it on in the second half. What does that even mean? They're playing Georgia State. This team was supposed to be the worst team in the country.
They were 2-10.
They were picked by prognosticators to literally be the worst team in the country.
Now, they're likely not, okay, based on what I saw on Saturday. They're likely not the worst team in college football, but they're not a good college football team. Right. So they're probably not 1/30th. They're probably 90th or 100. Okay. And Tennessee is probably 75th or 80th. They're not good. I didn't see anything promising in watching that game. What I thought when I was watching that game is BYU is going to beat them on Saturday night. It's not going to be a rout or anything, and BYU may lose because BYU is not good enough to walk in and beat a below mediocre team, because BYU is a mediocre team. And we'll get to our predictions at the end of the show. But this whole thing of everyone's like, oh my gosh, it would have been better if they had won because they wouldn't be motivated. What in the freak does that mean? Why? Right? Like, that's not a thing, guys. Like, why are you saying that? It's not a thing. Like, if they had crushed Georgia State, I would now be worried. If they had beat Georgia State 51-0, I would now be saying, crap, this team, you know, what's their coach? I can't remember their new coach's name. You're sitting here thinking, going, they could be, maybe he turned it around in year one. But they have two losing records 2 years in a row. They haven't been really good since 2007. 2007 was their last, like, really, really good team. And it's been, they were 9-4, what, 3 years ago? And then Butch Jones has a losing season, gets canned. And then they have a losing one last year and gets canned. So it's just terrible. Guys, so they're bad. They're bad. We'll get to their predictions here in a bit. So, anyway, if they hear the creaking, creepy creaking door things, my wife is just coming in and out of the office. So let's look. Travis Brewer on Facebook at facebook.com/writingsite. Shout. Guys, I did it again.
You're a mess.
I'm a mess. Ben Criddle talked how the only Utah games we won, we ran the ball 60-40. From the way we played, it looks like we should try this against Tennessee. I'm predicting a win, so you should be able to start wearing your hat again. He's referencing the picture I put on social media where my hat has been sitting in the same spot for days after I threw it after the Mandel face mask penalty. The third and
is it still in that spot? Is it still there right now?
I haven't moved it yet. I haven't moved it yet. I'm not moving it.
I don't think you should.
That's not true. I'm going to move it because I've got a packet to take with me to Utah. Matt, do we need to do this 60-40 run split? Is that a meaningful thing to you?
People talk about balanced attacks, and I don't think you go into your game plan worried in isolation about what the balance of your play calling is. That's all about defensive matchups, in my opinion. So I'm not gonna buy into that. You know, and we made some decisions about what we thought they could do defensively. They were playing very sound assignment football inside the box, and so we tried to do some other things to create some misdirection, to do some other stuff. Like you try and take what the defense gives you. So I don't see that in isolation as a metric that is helpful.
I think it's a metric that shows how the game is going, not what you should do ahead of time, right? In this case, BYU was not going to run a lot in the second half because disaster came, right?
Right.
So you end up having to throw the football there because you've got to get a bunch of yards fast. And quite frankly, besides the interceptions, Wilson looked okay, right? I mean, there were some decent throws and some good plays. And everyone, we'll get to Tyson Williams later, but everybody wants him to touch the ball like 50 times a game, apparently, which is ridiculous. That's never going to happen, guys. I think it's a good metric in that it shows you afterwards that you were able to impose your will on the other team from the running standpoint. And I think we should have tried running the ball more early because in the end, but take the fumble. The fumble was on a running play, right? Unless it was a run pass option, but I think it was a read option. So, I mean, you're going to.
Yeah, I believe that's. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the game would have been like without the turnovers, what the split would have been.
Well, see, but here's the thing, right? Everybody's all, and don't get me wrong, I'd love to see Tyson Williams get the ball more. I think I've said that 100 times in the past few weeks. I'd like to see him be featured as a feature part of the offense.
He's not going to be featured, but go ahead.
What I worry about is fans are jumping on this. That was the thing we didn't do, and that's why we lost. If we would have only done this thing, that I have no data supporting the fact that it would have been successful because we didn't do it, right? But that if we just added this piece that we didn't, we may have won the game. And that's riddled with it's just a bad argument, right? Because there's no data to support it.
Well, and the other piece
is the easy thing to say because it isn't what happened, right? So it's an easy thing to pick at.
You look at the statistics of that game, and I'll tell you, it's easy. We lost because of turnovers and dumb mistakes. It's easy. I mean, the total yards weren't substantially different. The average yards per play were substantially different. What was substantially different?
Statistically, go ahead.
What's substantially different is we turned the ball over three times, and how many times did they turn the ball over?
Right.
Zero.
So I think if you look statistically, especially in the first half, we looked better. Right, but the turnovers and being able to capitalize on that turnovers was a huge difference.
Oh, yeah. They did a great job.
And
I think
in the second half, and the defense was just worn down, and we showed a lack of depth defensively in the second half.
Well, I don't know if we showed a lack of depth. I think we showed a lack of. I think we showed fatigue, and maybe that's shape. But think of how many plays and minutes they were on the field in the second half. And Zach Moss, guy, I hear what you're saying about the depth and stuff. Zach Moss, when he's healthy, which we didn't have to face him last November, right? When he's healthy, he's one of the best running backs in college football. And he showed that. He was amazing. That play at the one-yard line, there's three running backs in all of college football that make that play, that don't get tackled at the one. Zane Anderson made a good – it was Anderson, right? Came at him
I believe it was.
With the right form and got him and should have gotten down. And he stayed on 1 foot somehow. Right? And so you look at that and you say, we got beat by one of the best players in college football on those plays. That's okay. You're likely not going to bottle that guy up. What you can't do is throw two pick sixes in a game where you're playing another good team. Let's go. Did you have something you wanted to say before we moved on to Chase's question?
I was just going to say, in terms of depth and getting worn down in the second half, not having Tonga on the field, and I understand that he is kind of heads and shoulders the best guy on the line of scrimmage defensively that we have, but losing him for most of the second half, I think was a big difference.
Oh yeah, massive.
And I think if you look at the trenches, if you look at the defensive linemen in the second half, they just could not keep up. We did not have an answer for Zach Moss in the second half.
No, we did not.
And we totally sold out in the first half on him, and it looked like – but if we had been able to sustain that, maybe we're talking about a different outcome here. I'm not even sure that that's true. But if we'd been able to sustain – I mean, we were just barely – like, you're just barely keeping your head above water in the first half, and then Tonga comes out, and the wheels came off.
Chase Blyle on Facebook, and again on Facebook, you can – no, he did email. This was an email, risingshotpod@gmail.com. He says, Kyle Whittingham is an underrated recruiter. He successfully planted one of his QB recruits at BYU, who ended up throwing more touchdowns to Utah in these last two games than to BYU. Ouch. Ouch, Chase. That hurts. You hurt Zach's feelings.
Yikes.
I'm all aboard the Tuiaki train. He's now on a different topic. His defenses haven't gotten much help since he started. But I've got to ask, is coordinating defenses or offenses harder in college football? Matt, that's an intriguing question. What do you think?
That's a fascinating question. And right now I'm going to say that the answer to that is defenses.
I think so too. I mean, it's the offense era of college football, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's defenses. I think trying to stop a really good offense is harder than trying to beat a really good defense. Though both are very hard. And both of these jobs are very hard jobs. Do we agree on that? Neither job.
I think they're both very hard jobs. Both very hard.
All right. Well, Matt, before we go on to our big why segment, I wanted to remind everybody that I will be at FanX, Salt Lake FanX Comic-Con convention. I've got two panels on Thursday and one panel on Saturday. So hit me up on social media if you're interested on the timing or any of that, or let me know if you're going to be there, because I'd love to meet people. And the other part is, we haven't talked about our Patreon page in a little bit. We are going to be doing a giveaway soon of some BYU paraphernalia, but it will only be eligible to Patreon subscribers. So go to patreon.com/riseandshout to support the podcast and get a chance to win some stuff. All right, Matt, the big why is what the loss to Utah means and what it doesn't. So we're going to go through a couple of topics and what this loss to Utah means. All right? What does it mean for the job security and the career of Kalani Sitake? Matt, any opening thoughts on that?
You know, it's a data point in this season. And I think that this is an important season, obviously, for Kalani Sitake as he's in a contract year. But I don't know that this puts the writing on the wall for Kalani Sitake.
Yeah, I agree with you. But here's a really bad stat. Kalani Sitake, in his 3+ years as head coach of BYU football, is 1-9 versus Utah, Utah State, and Boise, with his one win in there coming against Utah State, what, last year?
Yeah.
Or was that in year one?
You know what? I think that was year one, actually.
Yeah, I think that was year one.
Let's Google that.
Google. Go to the Google machine. So think about this for a second. 1-9 versus those schools. I'm going to tell you right now, I think Kalani Sitake is in trouble. He has lost to Utah State 2 years in a row, given up 85 points. Now, granted, they weren't a terrible team in either of those years. They were a good team in both of those years. He can't beat Boise, and he can't beat in the last 2 years, okay? In the last 2 years, so take it down to he's 0-7, 2+ years versus those teams. I'm telling you right now, I know the administration likes him and all that stuff, but if I think it was a given that he was going to be the coach next year, I think they would have extended him before the year started. Don't you?
They would have done it already. I agree.
So I think he's got to beat Boise and Utah State this year. I think that made, not them specifically, but if you lose both those games, this is going to be a mediocre season or worse. And I don't think, I mean, if he ends this year and he's 1-11 versus those three teams, I mean, that we recruit against Utah and Utah State every day. Boise less, but some. We got Zach Wilson away from them. John Nielsen on Facebook sent us a Facebook message. He talked about a lot of bad things from the game, but he, I think, was very critical of the coaching and decisions. For example, he says, Utah's a great running back, playmaking slot receiver, and an aggressive physical defense. In contrast, he says, John says, BYU mismanaged assets. Zach Moss got the ball 29 times and wore us down. Now, by the way, if they give the ball to Zach Moss 29 times a game, he doesn't make it through the season. That's my prediction. Healthy.
That's not going to be their game plan every week.
No. Britton Covey was targeted in key situations to great success. That's true. And their defense outscored our offense again. In short, BYU played just well enough to lose, and Utah played just well enough to win. I would say, actually, Utah played very well. They played mistake-free football. They don't have a tremendous offense because they have a mediocre quarterback, right? And besides Covey, I think the wide receiver and the options are, some of them are above average, but it's pretty mixed bag there. I think they played a very good game. I think Whittingham, they had a plan, they stuck to their plan, and they executed it. But Matt, do you think Kalani Sitake and his staff are mismanaging the assets they have, or is it they don't have enough assets?
So I feel like this is what's interesting about the way that John has teed this up is he says, in contrast, BYU's mismanaged of assets, and goes right into handing the ball to Zach Moss. So I feel like he's inferring here that we should have done a similar thing with maybe Tyson Williams or somebody else in the backfield. But against the Utah defense, that simply would not have worked. I don't think that the defensive line and those linebackers, I don't think we're going to hand the ball to a running back or any combination of running backs 30 times against that defense, and that's gonna put us in a position to win that game. I do believe that there was some mismanagement of assets, absolutely. Like the call when you got down into the red zone to bring in a Jaren Hall at quarterback and put and do this wildcat thing that was the fumble. I think that's absurd. I there's no excuse for that. I just think it's a ridiculous junior varsity decision. So there are some things like that that I think we struggle with a little bit on our offense. But I don't know that mirroring their approach is really what we should have done.
Well, and here's the other thing, which I don't understand. Put Hall not in a wildcat, just put him in as a running back next to Wilson. Then you create mismatches. This is what's bothering me so bad, is you put Wilson out as a wide receiver, which I don't know what. Just
and you're never going to throw him the ball.
Just do a sub.
You're wasting a position.
So just take him out, right? Because you can substitute, right? That's not a big deal. They allow that. So take him out if you're going to run the wildcat. Just take him out and put a real wide receiver out there. But here's the second thing. Put him in there right next to him. And you can hike it to him. You can do whatever you want. You create mismatches. The other thing is
do a halfback pass. You can do some crazy misdirection stuff.
Yeah, yeah. He can go in motion, and all of a sudden now it's at a wide receiver screen or, you know, lateral to a pass. All sorts of cool things you can do if you want to use him. The other part is if Bushman doesn't line up in the running back position at some point this year to create so that a linebacker has to freaking cover him, I'm going to go ape. This is what everybody is doing across college football and pros when you have a good tight end, is sometimes you line him up in the backfield to create mismatches. I don't understand why Grimes can't, like, and a couple of times we have him out there against their top cornerback. Like, that's not a mismatch. We don't win that. That guy's playing in the NFL in a year. Like, I don't understand why the heck you put Bushman there. Right? At that point, you've just basically given up your best player as a pass-catching option. So what John is saying here, I don't know that we should have handed the ball, to your point, 30 times, though I don't know that their defense is as good this year as they were last year. They lost some really good linebackers, right? But
yeah, but they didn't bite on the misdirection. They didn't bite. No, they were just very very well disciplined.
Disciplined. No, you're right.
It wasn't I just don't think it was the formula.
I just think we mismanage our assets. I just do. I don't think sometimes we see playmakers where there aren't playmakers. You know, and we've basically given up on special teams on getting a big return because we don't even have some of our best athletes returning the ball. You know. Anyway, all right. So what does this say about the state of the program? Has anything about the program changed from 7 days ago for you? Or is the program still in the exact same state it was?
For me, the program's still in the exact same state it was, but I think for a number of fans, this feels like a little bit of a wake-up call. Like, there is a gap here between teams that are in P5 conferences and are able to compete there and us. That's not what we are.
Wait, how can there be a gap? We're a mediocre football program right now. Our recruiting classes are mediocre. Our results have been mediocre. I mean, I've been saying this for, like, years, right? We're a mediocre football program today.
But I think a lot of fans saw us as we should be in a P5 conference because we would be competitive year in and year out in a P5 conference. And that's just not true. And I think that this loss, because it comes against Utah, because it's so many in a row, because this is the year that they are poised to make a run in the Pac-12, that that difference and the pain that results from that difference is a little bit more acute.
Yeah. Okay. What does it stay? What does this loss mean for independence? Zero.
So I don't
think for independence.
Okay. I'm starting to go a different route on that. Yeah.
But this loss doesn't. I think you're going a different route.
This loss doesn't. But I've been going a different route since last season, and you and I have talked about this. We've briefly talked about this on the show. I understand that financially, remaining independent is the correct decision. But for the sake of fun football, I think we need to accept who we are and join a G5 conference.
You wait, man. I hear what you're saying. You got to wait. You don't do it now. You wait for realignment just in case, and then you join a group of five conference, right?
Do I want to be in a P5 conference? Do I want to be the University of Arizona? Is that who, like, I don't know. I'm just saying.
It's a good point. Here's what I want for independence. We need to do two to three P5 conference games a year. Start scheduling some P5 non-traditional powerhouses. Because you can't know ahead of time when you're scheduling these games 5 years ahead of time if somebody's going to be good.
You just don't know.
And right. you do this deal with the Pac-12 where you're basically their Notre Dame, where you get a couple of Pac-12 games a year, and then you add one other P5 thing, and then you play a bunch of Mountain West, AAC, and you know whatever schools the rest of the year. The problem for us is always going to be not having our Power Five conference games towards the end of the year, having them at the beginning. You know, Jerem Jordan has been saying this on BYU Sports Nation for a couple of seasons. Our schedules are too hard, and I agree with him. Now, I didn't believe that, but they're just too darn hard. We're always going to be struggling to win 7, 8, 9 games. There's never going to be a year where it's just kind of easy because you had a good enough team and the schedule's not that great.
So do you think that difficult schedule gives Satake some level of a pass, or do you look at the fact that he's 1-9 against those three teams and that's the measuring stick?
How about this?
Overall win-loss.
He lost to UMass.
Yeah, barf, right? Barf.
I mean, here's the thing right now. He beats Wisconsin last year, and he loses to Cal at home. I mean, his teams are not consistent week to week. Now, nobody is completely consistent, right? There's ups and downs in every college football season. But, I mean, that Cal game was bizarre last year. We beat Arizona, and we come in and lose to Cal, and then we go beat Wisconsin? Now, granted, Wisconsin wasn't great last year, but they weren't a bad team. They were a pretty good team, just not as good as they had been the last couple of years before that. I don't know. Independence is fine to me. You stay with Independence until the deck is shuffled again, because not only does it potentially get you in a P5, which neither of us actually believe we're going to be in a P5, but it gives you the option. At that point, there'll be a bunch of movement, and you can probably pick your dance partners better for a new conference at that point than you could today.
Well, yeah, and I don't know that you have a choice, because there's nowhere to go right now. AAC is not going
to
take
Mountain
you today.
Mountain West is the place to go if you wanted today. Mountain West would take them back today.
Right.
Because of the
But market. I don't know that that's the – I think the AAC is the place to go. That's the conference, guys. No,
or do you want to be in a new conference? Because what happens if the
or
Big 12 –
Or some version of that. Right?
What happens if
it's
Texas
some the version
Oklahoma,
of current AAC. Yeah.
I'm saying something totally different than the AAC. What if Oklahoma and Texas bolt the Big 12? Then the Big 12 is no longer a Power 5. You've got a Power 4 because they're not going to grant Power 5 status to Kansas State, right? Sorry, Kansas State fans who might be able to hear me here in Kansas. You know what I mean? Like, wait.
So then puts together a conference with the good leftovers from that. They grab like Houston and UCF and us and Boise.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe Utah State.
And then they try to say we're a Power 5 conference. They won't win. But they'll try it, right? Because you'll have, you know, Iowa State and Kansas State and Boise and us. And so you'll have some schools that have had historical success. You know, Kansas State has been very good at times in their deal. But then you'll also have, like, KU. But if you also got, like, Houston and stuff, I don't know. All right, what does this Utah loss mean? What does it mean for Zach Wilson?
I'll be honest. I know he threw a couple of really meaningful picks. The one to Francis Bernard, I think he was planning to loft it over Bernard. I think he saw him, and his foot got clipped. He didn't see that guy was close to him and threw the pass off. But for the most part, especially in the first half, I think Zach Wilson was taking his time, was being very intentional about making his reads, and made some smart decisions with the football. This was just a very good defense. This is one of the best defenses we'll play all year. So I'm not ready to write a end of term report card on Zach Wilson after this performance. I think that he showed some maturity and some development in the way that he ran the offense versus last year.
He's a good quarterback, guys. He had a good end of the year last year. He's got the best stats we've had as a quarterback in years. Just chill out. Like, people just got to chill out. If you're asking to bench Zach Wilson, you just need to stop. You just got to stop.
That's just silly.
Stop. Like, you know, we can't. The booing Kevin Federick, the booing Robbie Bosco the year after he won the national championship, this kind of stuff makes us as a fan base look like idiots. Because Wilson is a good quarterback. He just had this amazing bowl game against, granted, Western Michigan. But still, you have to execute it. And then,
yeah, but he didn't throw a single incomplete pass against and that wasn't like they were playing against air. Right. Like, I know Western Michigan's not Utah, but geez, guys. I mean, anyway, this is a very good defense, okay?
It's a very good defense. And I can forgive, similar to you, the interception of Bernard. It stunk. It stinks, and maybe he should have just taken this sack, but he didn't actually. I don't watch that replay several times. He had no idea the guy was about to hit his foot. He didn't see it.
And
he
wasn't sensing it. And he's still used to outrunning defensive players, and those guys were just faster.
Yeah, they're faster.
Than he expected them to be. They were just fast.
The second one, you can't make that throw. The second one is bad, and he's got to learn.
He was pressing. He was pressing.
But go back to Max Hall. How many interceptions like did he throw like that did he throw in his career?
A gazillion, because he was in love with his arm. But that's what we loved about him, is that he felt like he could make every throw. And Zach Wilson is the same way. Riley Nelson was the same way. You go through some of these quarterbacks, like I would rather have a quarterback who thought he could make every single throw, who had the confidence that Zach Wilson shows, than somebody who was too timid. And because the other end of that spectrum, guys, is the guy takes the sack too much, right?
Yeah.
Or chucks the ball out of bounds too often.
Okay.
That's the other side of that spectrum. Yep. I'd rather err on this side.
All right. So we got two more. We're running behind time here. What does it say about our defense? Spencer Thurman says, what's more annoying, sending only three guys to rush instead of sacking the box against the run the whole game, or Zach's two picks for six throws? Guys, Zach's two picks. The defense is fine. Can we stop harping on the defense? I'm not trying to pick on Spencer, but we got to stop harping on the defense. The defense is fine. The defense has been fine for years. They're not going to be perfect, though. They're not a top 10 defense. And there's no Kyle Van Noy on the defense today, especially if Tonga's hurt. There's no, you know, massive difference maker, though Gunwalaku was pretty amazing on Thursday.
Oh, Gunwalaku was awesome in special teams and on defense. I thought he did a great job. Yeah, the big difference here, guys, is Tonga in the second half.
Yeah,
but I still think we lose this game.
I still think we lose the game. I agree.
And we turned the ball over and put the defense in some bad spots.
What does this say about what does it mean for the rest of the season? Gary Payne at Fast Break GP said, so I always cheer for the U when not playing BYU, more so in a year when we lose. Is that acceptable? Well, I mean, you can do whatever you want, Gary. I never root for them ever.
I remain indifferent to the University of Utah except for when we play them.
All right.
But like any other team.
Yeah, like any other, they aren't to me. I just want them to lose. Does a single win in the opening four represent progress, or do we need to win 2-3 now to move the program forward? Matt?
That's a good question. That's a good question. The answer is we got to win 2 or 3.
To show progress. Yeah, probably.
Winning one of these is just like we talked about a minute ago. Like you lose to Cal, you beat Arizona, you lose to Cal, and then you beat Wisconsin. Like, sure, we can win a couple. And Arizona turned out to not be very good. Like, and Tate was hurt. So I think that if you want to show progress, you got to win at least two of these.
So let me ask
you
a question.
Or you're going backwards.
What's our record after four games? Your prediction now, because you had us beating what, Tennessee and USC, right? You had us 2-2. Are you still at that? Because you thought we were going to lose to Utah.
Right, I did.
So why would you change that?
I think USC is a little bit better than I thought they were.
Yeah, their offense certainly is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're going to lose that USC game, and I thought we were going to win that USC game, and I think we beat Tennessee. Oops, I just let go.
We'll get to that in a minute, but that Washington game, don't even ask.
Yeah, it's not going to be good. All right, so our game today is over-under, kind of a preview style of Tennessee. We're not going to do a full-on preview. Before that, though, Dan Roach at Brute J, D, DR on Twitter says, buy or sell, Tennessee losing to Georgia State is an indicator that BYU will do well against them on Saturday. Buy.
Buying it. I'm buying all of that. I want them all.
When you're a bad team and you show you're a bad team, that's good for us. Plus, it gives us a lot of good film to look at, to look at ways to defeat them. And by the way, apparently the maybe it's Hall's time to shine because their quarterback was just running the read option all night. All right, so over under BYU offensive yards 352. By the way, that's the total that Georgia State had. And we had 300 against Utah. Matt, oh, you're taking the over or the under at 352 offensive yards for BYU on Saturday.
Do I believe we will put up more yards than Georgia State?
Yes. Fact. Over. Tennessee offensive yards, 400. They had 404 against Georgia State.
I'm taking the under, guys.
Zach Wilson passing 250 yards. Over, under.
Over.
I'm going to take the under because I think we're going to run the ball more. Touches for Tyson Williams, 15 and a half, which would be a career high. Ooh. I think he had 16 touches.
I saw some really great clips of him running against Tennessee, but I'm still taking the under on 15 and a half. That's a great line because 15 is the number.
I think I'm going to take the over. I think he gets 16 touches, but that's a tough one. 51 total points. That's the line in Vegas, the over-under line in Vegas, 51.
I'm going under.
I'm also taking the under. And then they are 3.5-point favorites, which is a absolutely ludicrous line. It opened at 1. Obviously, people are taking Tennessee, which I don't understand. I guess people are buying the – and again, Tennessee may win this game. BYU is not good enough to just give me confidence that this is going to be a walk-in type of game. Matt, what are you taking, BYU at 3.5 or Tennessee?
I'm taking BYU at 3.5.
Me as well. Final prediction, sir.
So and we've been through this a little bit. I think we all know what I expect to see. I think Zach Wilson is going to be okay. I believe Tyson Williams is going to get the ball a lot. I think he's going to catch and run the ball. I think we walk out of there. We do just enough to keep them bottled up. I mean, the guy did throw for 311 yards against Georgia State and a couple of touchdowns. I mean, this is a decent team. This is a team that can beat us, but at the end of the day, BYU comes out of there with a win, 24-21.
It's a good prediction. I have 27-21. I think it'll be close into the fourth quarter. And again, Tennessee may win this game. Don't take this as like overconfidence. Tennessee may win this, but it's not because Georgia State provided motivation. It'll be because they just execute better than we do. That's how this usually works. It's not as... Yeah. It's not a narrative. It's not a story. It's a game, right?
They're not movies, right? I mean, it's not like, it's a game.
And some of the players on Tennessee, no doubt, will be highly motivated by losing to Georgia State. Some of them will be deflated, right? And I think that stuff a lot of times balances out. Unless the coaching staff is deflated, then it probably kind of trickles to everybody. And BYU is going to, I don't understand why they would be more motivated now going into Tennessee than they were before. They need this win or something like that. Don't you want and need everyone?
I think if you're BYU, that's where you have to look at it.
Yeah, and you've got a chance to go into a historic football stadium against a historic team, and apparently this is Kalani's thing, right? Because he beat Wisconsin last year.
Yeah, I mean, and they're going to do the checkerboard, I hear, which will be pretty cool.
And I know this is a tough week for Don and his wife because they also root for the University of Tennessee.
It doesn't feel like it's really tough for Don's wife. She is all in on the Volunteers.
Okay, fair enough. It's not tough for me.
I'm 0% conflicted here.
All right.
But yeah, again, don't take my prediction for a win as this is very much a game that BYU may lose.
Okay, favorite SEC quarterback of all time, Peyton Manning or Tebow?
If those are my two choices, I'm taking Manning.
Okay. Do you have a favorite SEC quarterback of all time besides
Peyton? Maybe it is. Besides Peyton Manning?
Mine's Tim Tebow. I'm just saying this to annoy Don.
Johnny Manziel.
Johnny Manziel, that's your favorite SEC quarterback of all time. He was both a Big 12 and an SEC quarterback, right? Wasn't he there during the flip? Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Of course, you can always check out Instagram. We'll be posting, or at least one of us, will be posting Insta shouts as we go through. I posted one today about Tennessee and USC, and I'm worried about USC. Watching those big wide receivers get up and catch the balls. A little worried about that. But check it out. There'll be some more throughout. And Matt and I don't know, a halftime show. Are we doing one this week?
I don't know. Yeah, let's do her.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. On Facebook.com/RiseAndShout, you can join us for halftime. I'm going to be somewhere in Salt Lake City that night. I'm not even sure where. Might be at my in-law's house. Might be at a hotel watching this game. I'm not sure. So anyway, Matt, anything else before we take off?
Yeah, don't freak out, everybody. It's just one game.
Yeah, don't freak
out. That's all I'm going
to say. Just one game. I mean, we all, most of us, not me, probably thought we were going to lose anyway, and we got the result we thought. So it stinks, and it feels terrible, but it's not. Utah's a pretty good team, and I think Utah made me think they're going to win the Pac-12 South watching them. And you had a bunch of BYU fans saying they're going to win the Pac-12 with this team. And I'm like, I think they might. That's guys, both the fact that the Pac-12 South might not be very good.
National pundits commented on this game by saying that this team looked like a national contender the way they played us. You can look at them with your blue glasses and be like, oh, they're not really that good. But first of all, what does that say about us? Secondly, like, guys, they put together a pretty good game. Their quarterback is very pedestrian. He is not very good. Zach Moss is the real deal.
Yeah.
And that defense is stout. Dude, so, I mean, they, and if you look at up and down the Pac-12 right now, they will absolutely compete.
Yeah, they will compete. I don't know if they'll win the Pac-12 South. I mean, there's a lot of season. Moss gets hurt. A couple injuries on the defensive side. There's lots of things that can happen. But I'm not trying to be nice to Utah, but I try to be realistic about even the teams that I want to lose all the time. And I like Whittingham. I also don't understand, like, the hate against Whittingham. He's a BYU guy, for heaven's sakes. I mean, I want them to lose every game, but I like him.
And lo, those many years ago, he made the same decision that 99% of us would have made.
What, took the money with Utah?
Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yes.
I wouldn't have made that decision.
Yeah, you're a liar.
I'm not a liar. I totally would have coached at BYU. You
don't think so? Good for you.
You would have taken the money.
I absolutely would have taken the money. It's a professional decision. I would view, if I were a college football coach, I would view it as a career. I would be making a professional decision on where was the greater opportunity, what school provided me with a better opportunity and was going to pay me more money. Right. Like, I don't even think it would have been that difficult.
Fair enough. All right. Well, on that note, Matt saying that he'd love to be a Ute will end this.
It's not like choosing episode. A team to cheer for. It's not the same thing, guys.
It's a job decision.
It's exactly the same thing. It is not the same thing.
It's the exact same thing. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. And by the way, you're fine. Yeah, you're totally right. Thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Of course, you can always get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. You can tweet at us at @BYU_RiseShout. And we'll catch you next time.
Go Cougars. With some girl I didn't know who she was, but I'd walked straight back out the door. They were doing stuff just because. Display of affection, bad place for rejection.